Then a woman with a very thick foreign accent but speaking proper English says, "Oh, my God, it's Mr. Greer." And I said, "Dr. Greer to you, bitch." And hung up. In those days, I was outraged by these things. Now, I could care less. So, I told this man, "Yes, I'm sure that's true." He said, "But, you know, this really does need to happen." I said, "But why don't you do it?" And he said, "Oh, no, it's too dangerous." He said exactly what Lawrence Rockefeller had said to me in September, standing out on his deck under the stars. By now you see a theme that keeps repeating: there are extremely well-connected people who are on the inside and who want to see disclosure, but they're terrified of the rogue, violent group. After this meeting, I got an invitation from a group of rogue insiders to go to Phoenix in the winter of 1994. The meeting was at the Wrigley Mansion, the old, fabulous mansion that the Wrigley Chewing Gum family had built. It had been taken over by a cell within this covert group. Present were a number of shadowy corporate people. It was a very late night meeting. A prominent industrialist who was involved with this cell was kept on drugs and was kept under some kind of mind control while this cell milked him of his money. They then used his money to support this particular operation. The methods and motives of this group are beyond dark. I tell people, more than 10 or 15% of what I have seen and learned you don't want to hear. It's so damned disturbing, most people would commit suicide. And many people have, by the way. We all gathered around a conference table in the Wrigley Mansion. The discussion was about disclosing UFO information and making contact with ETs. One man, during a break, took me out onto a balcony and said, "You know, we understand you've had this meeting with the CIA director and are providing information to the president, but you need to know that those people don't know anything, and they're never going to know anything. You should understand that. Well, you should be talking to people like us. The people dealing with this are people who do a lot of contract work for the government, underwork for others, WFO, contracts. And you should be talking to certain think tanks. And you should be talking to certain religious orders and certain orders of Jesuit priests who have control over the technology transfer. And you should be talking to." He gave me a whole list. Well, I thought the man had certainly gone round the bend. But it turned out that every single word he said was true. It all was confirmed in the following months. It gets more bizarre. This group or cell within the shadow government was attempting to intercept what we were doing. Remember, now, this is 94. A former head of Army Intelligence, a member of that group, had offered me a board seat in 92. So, things are progressing, and I'm not straying from my course, because that's how I am. So this man said, "We can really help you." I asked, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you know, if you want to be supported in this, just let us help you." I said, "How do you intend to help us?" "Well, you're a doctor, right? So, you have really good credit. We've checked this out." And I said, "Oh, yes, the best." He said, "Well, we know you have platinum cards and gold cards. Just maximize all of them, every month, $50,000, $100,000, whatever. Get as many of them as you want. And give us the numbers. And since we run all the supercomputers that back up and monitor the banking system of the world, we'll simply erase those account balances to zero, as paid each month. This is a true story. I'm telling you, every word is true. Put me under any drug, hook me up to any machine. What I'm telling you is true." I said, "Yes, but then if I did that, you'd own my ass, wouldn't you?" He just had a twinkle in his eye. I was much too wise to take that bait, tempting as it was. This has been an enormous financial strain and struggle for those of us trying to do this with virtually no funding. But no way was I going to do that. Then he said, "I understand you're going to Europe soon to meet with certain people connected to the British royal family," which I was. He knew everything I was doing. And I said, "Well, that's true." He said, "It so happens that, I'm going to be over there meeting with the Rothschilds and the people who control the Volvo Corporation and some of the other big industrial concerns, because they're working with us. I said, oh, I'm quite sure that's true. He suggested, let's rendezvous while we're in London together. I said, okay, that's fine. He proceeded to tell me, one of my friends, who's really interested in what you're doing, is one of the leaders of the Council on Foreign Relations, Ambassador Maxwell Rabb. Would you like to come to a meeting with him? I said, well, sure, if he wants to help us. And then he said, and also, the Petersons. Mr. Peterson was head of the Council on Foreign Relations and his wife was head of the Trilateral Commission, are also working with me, and maybe we can get together with them. So I said, when we have our next event, I'll invite them. He said, you need to know that all these people are reading what you write and are very interested in all of this. And I said, I know that. Look, everyone puts their pants on one leg at a time. I view all humans as educable. And everyone has a role to play in this whole cosmic drama. But this shadowy contact was essentially, again, inviting me into the inner leading circle of the cabal. While I had no intention of being controlled by them, I have no problem sharing perspective and knowledge with them. He also said that there were many top people that he worked with in the media and that his group worked with Bono and U2, the Moody Blues, Pink Floyd and various other groups. And they were receiving what I was writing. And I just said, well, I appreciate that. He said, they love what you are saying and doing. Later that winter, I went to Europe and met with some very good friends of Prince Charles and Prince Philip. One of Prince Charles' best friends is very supportive of the work we are doing. She wanted to receive some of the materials that I had put together for the CIA director and the president, so she could share them with Prince Charles and others. But remember, I'm squeezing this in between my emergency shifts. I literally, at times, went over to Europe for 2 or 3 days at a time, and would come back and have to work a 24-hour shift in the emergency department. In a sense, it was our own little shuttle diplomacy operation. I did meet with this shadowy Phoenix contact in London. He was still in the mode of courting me into his operations. So I would listen and learn, but never capitulate. This group is the largest mafiosi and organized criminal enterprise on the planet. Meeting friends in Santa Barbara. I was being interviewed by a major New York paper, and they were going to run the story about our briefings for the White House and CIA director on UFOs. The very day they were going to run that story, Linda Tripp emerged with her stories about Monica Lewinsky. That was not an accident or a coincidence. It knocked all this off the radar screen of the media. And for the next couple of years, it was 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The blowjob heard round the world. What utter nonsense. News flash, the best aphrodisiac is power. And powerful men have affairs. And guess what? Married men who have affairs sometimes lie about them. Gee whiz. An impeachment proceeding based on this? Give me a break. Hillary Clinton was right when she said there was a conspiracy to assassinate Bill Clinton by character assassination instead of with a bullet. She was absolutely correct, and it was over this and related issues. By the mid-90s, I concluded that the President of the United States was not going to deal with the UFO problem and that, if he looked into it much further, it would be the end of his presidency. It was around this time that I met a good friend of President Carter who told me that Carter, in his early days as president and during the transition into his presidency, tried to find out about the entire government UFO matter. Carter had a UFO sighting in Georgia when he was governor, and we have his official report. So Carter tried to get a briefing from then, CIA Director George Bush, the current president's father, but Bush told him he would not give him that information and he should get it elsewhere. Later, as Carter pushed further on this, he was visited by a suit, who said, sir, if you would like to complete your first term as president, you will keep your god-damned mouth shut about this UFO matter. This insider and friend of Carter's told me that he, and perhaps his family, were directly threatened. We learned from separate sources, including some Disclosure Project witnesses, that Jimmy Carter wanted to do a White House study on UFOs and that it was going to be done through SRI, Stanford Research Institute. Pentagon covered projects then told SRI that they would pull all of their contracts supporting SRI if they were to proceed with the Carter White House request to look into UFOs. So the study idea was buried. This is just part of a long pattern, going back to at least Eisenhower, of United States presidents being threatened, and in the case of Jack Kennedy, being assassinated. Others have had their entire lives and prayers, identity threatened if they push this issue. So this is the mother of all cause, Mick buzzsaws that I walked into between 1992 and now. Bill Clinton didn't have the courage to do it. But I believe, quite frankly, he could have. Doesn't our public expect our leaders to be willing to go the distance regardless of their own personal ambition or their own personal safety? Most politicians are not courageous. We have a weak and spineless ruling class that is intoxicated on money, power, and selfish ambition. So even when they find out about these issues, they don't have the backbone and stamina to do the right thing on behalf of the Earth, the Earth's people, or even the citizens of the United States. Between 1994 and 1997, as we continued to work the system, I decided it was very important to reach out to the legislative bodies of the world. If the president, as a single person, was too terrified, and too threatened to act, and his inner circle was being denied access to information, then the next best venue was Congress. So many senior White House officials were being denied access that it was clear only an open hearing in Congress could change things officially. Regarding other senior officials being blocked, astronaut Gordon Cooper personally told me that Secretary of Defense Cohen had learned of Gordon Cooper's team filming a landed UFO at a dry lake bed at Edwards Air Force Base in the 1950s. Cohen tried to get access to that information but was denied access. Cohen knew the dates and details of the landing and filming, and yet Cohen could not gain access to the film or the records. So, we met with a number of members of Congress, including a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Dick Bryan, of Nevada, home to Area 51, and others who were in key positions. As we networked, we found we could meet privately with a number of key congressmen. We presented the evidence and asked them, please sponsor open hearings at which these top secret witnesses can testify before a committee of Congress with the world news media present. What I found in almost every case is that they all wanted to know, but they didn't want to act. I'll never forget being picked up by one of these little golf cart type vehicles at McCarran Airport in Las Vegas. I flew in just for a few hours to meet with Senator Bryan of Nevada during the mid-90s. We arrived at what looked like a janitor's closet with a nondescript door. When you opened it, you entered a beautiful conference room. It was used for these types of VIP meetings at the airport. I was escorted into the room, and then the senator came in. We spent about an hour together. Senator Bryan had an aide with him who sat on the couch. The senator and I and my escort were at the conference table. I don't believe the aide at first understood what the meeting was about. The senator asked, "Well, who have you met with to date?" And I said, "The CIA director and this person at the Joint Staff," and I saw the aide drop the paper he was nonchalantly reading. He looked like someone had punched him. As the briefing proceeded, Senator Bryan said he had no doubt these matters were real and ongoing, but that he had never been allowed access to that information. This, from the mouth of a senior member of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. I then said, "You know, we desperately need for someone like you to hold open hearings on this subject, much as Gerald Ford had in the late 60s. As soon as I said that, he changed from being extremely engaged to being very defensive. He said, "Well, you've met with all these people, why doesn't the president do it?" I said, "I think you must know why the president won't. This is really a big nut to crack." And he said, "Well, I'm just a senator." I said, "Well, I'm just a doctor. You took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, And I am giving you evidence that the Constitution of the United States has been subverted, that the chain of command has been decapitated, that the Congress has been kicked to the curb, and that the most important technologies and information in the history of the human race are being managed by a rogue, illegal group. If this doesn't necessitate an inquiry by the Congress, what does? He sat impassively for a moment, then said, I don't know if I can do that, but have you spoken, Ken, to John Warner on armed services? I said with all the passion I could muster, sir, I'm speaking to you. I was trying to not let him wiggle off the hook. But it was clear that Senator Bryan was just terrified at the thought of pursuing the matter. We went through this same process with numerous members of Congress, the Senate, the executive branch, the military, the United Nations, and others, with no action being taken. Eventually I was invited by a group at the United Nations to give a lecture there. The title of my talk was, The Foundations of Interplanetary Peace. If you look in the papers in my first book, there is a chapter by that title. The paper was written because I was asked to give this presentation at the UN. Most people don't realize that almost everything I've written has been in response to a request from a group interested in knowing the truth. This type of process has been the catalyst for the creation of my earlier books. I took one of my daughters who was 12 at the time to this meeting at the UN. We arrived at the main entrance, where visitors go in. As we were waiting in line to go through security, I suddenly heard an enormous commotion in the lobby. Looked over, and there was the wife of the Secretary General of the United Nations, with the Chief of Protocol and Security and a whole entourage, motioning for me to come over. So they came over and opened up the rope, and we went through and bypassed security. We exchanged greetings and Mrs. Boutros, Ghali took my left arm, and I had my daughter's arm on my right. As this whole entourage is walking through the great entrance hall of the UN, Mrs. Boutros, Ghali turned to me and asked, when are you going to get this done? I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, this information that we are not alone has to get out to the world. I said, well, Leah, you and your husband are the head of the world. You're the head of the United Nations. I'm only a country doctor from North Carolina. And she said, oh, no. It's too dangerous for Boutros. They'll kill Boutros. And I thought to myself, what am I? Chopped liver? And of course, the answer is yes, I am just that. I'm cannon fodder, this is true. I'm the expendable one in these circles, that was made very clear to me from 92 onwards. So, I said, you know, I can only do so much, Leah. She was among the most powerful women I've ever met. She had an enormous presence and was very spiritual and had great insight. We requested that the long-awaited disclosure event take place at the UN. They agreed to that. But around the time that the agreement was made, they ushered Boutros, Ghali out. Normally, the Secretary Generals get 2 terms. He only had 1. They cited all sorts of reasons why they had to get rid of him, just like they got rid of Kurt Waldheim. And as it turns out, Kurt Waldheim had supported creating the Office of Outer Space Affairs, which does exist at the UN, moving the office's headquarters out of New York to Europe where it could really look into these issues. But they axed him over this, and brought out the Nazi allegations against him. Boutros, Ghali was looking into these UFO issues, and they axed him. So in comes Kofi Annan. A senior aide to Kofi Annan, a Korean who was the highest diplomat in the United Nations bureaucracy from Korea, reached out to us. He said, they have agreed to let us have the big hall, at the United Nations, to host these top military and government witnesses to UFOs for a conference. This was agreed to. But a few weeks later, this ambassador called me and said, never call me again at the United Nations. Here is my home number. He'd become interested because he'd been aware of some extraordinary UFO events that were happening in Korea. I was shocked. I asked, what are you talking about? He said, well, I know we've agreed to host this for you, but it can no longer happen. The Secretary General was visited by some people who showed him documents that so scared him that he knew he couldn't do anything more with this. I was told that the UN, which was almost bankrupt, would have been shut down and closed. Essentially, these intelligence operatives and drans, national rogues threat, end the UN leadership and put the fear of God in them. A lot of my life has been wonderful, but dealing with the shadow government has been very disturbing. So disturbing that at times I have had to just let it all hang out with whoever is there. For example, one time I was meeting with a bunch of spooks in California who were associated with an Air Force base near Sacramento. It was an intense time and I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to go somewhere and have a drink and be quiet. A man, I'll call him George, sat down beside me on a stool and started talking. I was in no mood to talk, but he wanted to chat and asked, "What are you doing in town?" "I'm quite sure you don't want to know," I said. "Well, actually, I do," George said, munching on peanuts. "Well, I've been here meeting with some people," I responded. "Well, what do you do?" he asked. I said, "I'm an emergency physician, but that's not why I'm here." "Well, why are you here?" he asked, and so I said, "You'll be sorry, but I'll tell you." So I proceeded to do a massive brain dump into this poor soul. I told him everything I've shared with you, and more. I told him the name of every operative, every spook, every corporation, who'd been murdered, what cell killed Jack Kennedy, who was part of that cell that I've met with, I mean, the whole damned thing. You know, it felt great to get all that off my chest, but he looked like he'd been run over by a freight train. And I said, "Well, I told you I didn't think you wanted to hear this." George asked, "How in the world can you be telling me all this?" I said, "Because I'm nobody. I'm not under any security classification." Intrigued, he asked, "Well, how do you know this stuff?" I said, "You don't even want to know that." Said, "You think that that spineless shill at CBS would report this? Good luck." I said, "I know for a personal fact that Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes was given smoking gun evidence on this, years ago. Bob Schwartz, who was on the board of Time, Life and was a noted journalist, was friends with Mike Wallace and had given him the original MJ-12 documents. Wallace had vowed to do an expose on this, but it was killed, and he didn't have the guts to stand down the corporate whores at CBS to do the story. So, who are you going to go to that's going to get this out? You're acting as if we have a free press, and we don't, and haven't had one for decades," I said. In the spring and summer of 1994, I started reaching out to some other folks who were involved in overseas operations related to UFOs. And one of them was S.A., a crown prince. A friend of his, who was also interested in what we were doing and was very supportive, suggested that I talk to him and felt that we should get together. Princess A. was also friends with Lawrence Rockefeller, and as it turned out, had been pulled into the Col. M.K., General T.E. W.B. shadow cell operating here in the United States. Well, after we spoke on the phone, I received a personal letter from Prince S.A., saying, "I think what you're trying to do is very noble. However, I don't believe you will be allowed to do it, and I need to speak with you about this." He didn't want to talk about it on the phone. He wanted to meet. So, we met in July of 1994. He was in New York City, staying at the Four Seasons Pierre Hotel, which is on Fifth Avenue near Central Park, not far from Lawrence Rockefeller's home. So, I went to New York with one of our daughters. You have to understand, I took my daughters everywhere. We had what were called dates with Daddy. My life being what it was, I needed to involve them. It was wonderful having time with each one alone, so we would take these special trips. So, we went to the hotel to meet the prince. He is very elegant, courteous and friendly. While my daughter played quietly in a corner, we had a private meeting to discuss the entire UFO matter. After a time, he finally got to what he wanted to say to me in the letter but didn't want to write or say on the telephone. The prince said, "You know, you won't be allowed to do this disclosure. I said, oh, why is that? He says, you won't be allowed to, but not because of what you think. He said, the aliens won't let you. I said, really? Well, it turns out the prince's brother had been abducted by what he thought were aliens. But the prince did not know that the abduction was done by a covert paramilitary operation. This was investigated by a NASA researcher who I've worked with for years, but who doesn't know that I learned that this NASA researcher is part of the shadow government and is an eschatological, fundamentalist, end, of, their, world Christian. He interfaces in the UFO world as an objective scientist investigating serious UFO phenomenon, but that is not his real role. This particular NASA scientist told me that the prince's brother had been abducted from the castle in his country. Now, what he didn't know is that I have a source inside the covert paramilitary operations who do abductions who told me that, yes, of course, we abducted him so that this particular powerful family and the banking empire would be on board with our program to fight the aliens. Princess A told me these extraterrestrials had been the cause of every conflict on Earth since Adam and Eve, and that they were the ones enforcing the secrecy. I asked, really? Why do you think they appear over us with dozens of witnesses, interacting and signaling to us and appear over major cities of the world, if they're wanting to be so secret? He had no answer for that. I said, I have to disagree with you. I think it is a very human group that wants to keep this secret, because to disclose it would mean the end of the entire centralized power system that exists, all fossil fuels, and the entire paradigm of anthropocentric religiosity. We had a frank but courteous exchange of ideas, and then we agreed to disagree. It was clear that the prince viewed the AT presence as something to fear and hate, and that he supported military action against them. But in the course of this, he told me, President Bush Sr. wants Ed to do this, as well. Around the time of the end of the Cold War, a group that I was involved with that included Gorbachev, President Bush, the United Nations Secretary General, Perez de Cuellar, were meeting to plan the release of this information to the public. This was in 1989. He said, but one night, during a late night planning session in New York, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Perez de Cuellar, was coming back from a meeting where the plans were being put in place to make this announcement about ETs, and a UFO appeared, stopped his motorcade, and abducted him out of the limousine. They took him on board the craft, and told him that if they didn't stop this plan to disclose the extraterrestrial presence, that every world leader involved, including the United States president, would be abducted and taken off this plan, and that they would stop the process. This is the famous case where an abduction researcher talks about a major international figure being abducted, along with a civilian who witnessed it. What they didn't know is that I knew people in the cell operating the alien reproduction vehicles and the psychotronic weapons systems that were set up and conducted this abduction. In fact, a relative of the infamous red-headed sergeant at Roswell who threatened everyone, was there to coordinate the event. He was inserted as part of the security detail for the Secretary General, and he set up the electronics at the site of the Secretary General's motorcade, so that this late-night pseudo-abduction of the UN Secretary General could take place. The goal of the operation was to stop this entire attempt by the world's power elites, including Gorbachev, to disclose the truth to the world. Now, Princess A really thought it was an alien abduction, just like he thought his brother was abducted by aliens. He didn't know that those abduction events are paramilitary operations run by humans, using things that look like UFOs and even having creatures on boards that look like extraterrestrials but are either disguised humans or man-made creatures. This is called stagecraft, and I have a document that describes these operations. It is from one of the private institutes involved in the simulation of alien abductions. This has gone so far that they have engaged in the abduction of world leaders to try to cause them to hate extraterrestrials and support Star Wars. It also convinces these leaders to shut down any effort to get the information out that I should hate and fear aliens. They wanted to convince me that the aliens were evil, that they were from Satan, that we needed a holy war against them. They were attempting to convince me by teaching me a very hard lesson. But I knew this was man-made. The only thing I could do was turn to God.